liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that brand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be Come As You Are.
Come As You Are, indeed. That's what Jim would say. Hey, everybody, this is Mitch sitting in for Jim. Jim is down with COVID, he said, over a message over the weekend. That COVID had slammed him pretty hard, and that he is that he would be out today. And I know I can see in Studio A, Maggie Rose has Dr. Judy Mikovits on, a virologist, cancer researcher, and also worked with HIV. She's been instrumental in this fight, also. Instrumental on the other side on the legal issues, which we're going to talk about today. That's where I'm taking the show today. And during the first hour of the show, I'm going to play a video clip. It may go a little longer, but I'm going to kill the bottom of the hour break. I'll tell you that right out the front door here. And this is a live stream did yesterday with civil rights attorney Robert Barnes and David Freiheit. He's a candidate for the People's Party of Canada. And I believe it's in the Quebec or the Montreal, Quebec, I believe, area. But check on the with the People's Party of Canada. And they had a lot of things to say about COVID, discussing coming COVID lawsuits, the legality and the rationing behind a lot of what you see is going on today. So I'm going to get this going because it's a it's actually probably an hour and 5 minutes long, the part where they just talk about the COVID. And at the very end, they wrap up with one topic towards the end of the COVID stuff about the coming, or I should say, the idea that they put forward about interstate travel bans. Just a canard, if you ask me. Let me share this my sound and screen here. and start sharing. So here it is. This is Robert Barnes and Viva Fry on YouTube, episode 74. Yeah, free speech and, well, COVID. How's that sound for the first hour? Here you go.
Robert, how goes the battle?
Good, good.
All right, so there's a lot on the menu tonight. I mean, we're going to start with one that I know you're going to know more about because I've been following it, but I'm not saying I'm spreading myself thin. I'm just saying that I'm getting spread thin. So I'm doing my best to keep up with the news. But Robert, what's going on in Afghanistan? What is going on in the States? I saw Jack Posobiec is trying to get Where's Joe Biden trending. Debrief the rest of the world. What is going on? The withdrawal from Afghanistan, the utter collapse, and now they're bringing back more troops.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they really believe their own internal BS over the last 20 years, because the pitch has been that we were there building a government, building institutions of government, building a lasting democracy, building a security force, building a domestic military. And those of us who have been critics have suggested that that was not what was happening and not what was occurring. And it was just one big money laundering grift for a bunch of defense industry contacts to build up, hoppy distribution machines and, the opium and heroin explosion that, maybe not coincidentally coincided with our invasion there and setting up. We made it safe for poppy fields is what we really did for the last 20 years. And the Taliban was the institution that we helped install between 1979 and 1990 when we wanted to drive the Soviets out. And if the Soviets couldn't contain it, and if the Taliban's own, where this was the only institution in town, once the Soviets left, that was a sign that we were highly unlikely to actually build lasting institutions. We instead built grifting institutions. If people were somewhere between the Taliban and the U.S. and their perception of Afghani power in Afghanistan, they were mostly shut out of any degree of influence. And now we're seeing the consequence for that. And apparently they didn't fully predict it or anticipate it. So we're re-seeing Saigon 1975 almost identical images of the helicopters lifting up over buildings as people despair to rush to the airport to get out of town because they reverse the normal script for getting out of town. The normal script for getting out of town is first destroy the secret documents. Second, get key military personnel out. Getting the key civilian personnel out. Third, make sure the transition is in place. And then the military leaves. Biden did it in reverse order. And so it's a complete embarrassment and total debacle. Not that we ever should have been there, because it was always an unsustainable objective from the first instance. Yeah.
Robert, I seem to have missed Marion Holtzman's $499.99 super chat. Barnes, you must get involved in every lawsuit for we the people, please. Now, first of all, Marion, I'm thanking you for the super chat. If that was a mistake of a number, email me afterwards. And I'm not saying this tongue in cheek. If it was not a mistake, thank you very much. It's beyond generous. If there was a dot of a typo of a mistake, please email me afterwards and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. If you meant to give more, we can accommodate you too.
Well, I don't know what the limit is at YouTube, but I mean, look, if that was a mistake, if it was a mistake, thank you. And thank everyone regardless. But if that was an accidental typo, let me know. Cause it has happened. And I would feel regardless. And I'm sorry, I can't bring it up. Marion Holtzman, Barnes, get involved in every lawsuit. On that note, how are you doing in terms of the lawsuits that you're getting involved in? What's coming down the pipeline?
A lot of suits probably to be filed this week and next. So the suit against the FDA with Bobby Kennedy concerning whether or not the emergency use authorization and any biologic license for a COVID-19 vaccine has met proper legal scrutiny under the Administrative Procedures Act and constitutional rights at issue, given that it is being the FDA's approval, even under just emergency approval, is being used by governments, employers, and educational institutions in places of public accommodation to issue coercive mandates or segregation plans. And so that raises issues of whether or not their decisions have been what's called arbitrary and capricious, whether or not they followed the rule. The rule of reason is what's really supposed to happen, that's enforced by the rule of law, that is supposed to be supervised by with judicial oversight. And there, that just hasn't happened in our view. Now, for the details of any medical information related to this question or controversy, for that, people have to go to vivabarneslaw.locals.com right there. That's where you can look up the various breakdowns of the fact sheets relating to the vaccine, to responses to the CDC and the Department of Justice's positions to date on the vaccine, and I'll be out to prior lawsuits concerning the vaccine and whether emergency use authorization should have occurred, whether biologic licensing should occur, whether it should be limited by groups of people, by individual characteristics, whether that be age, whether that be comorbidities, whether that be particular health conditions, whether it's appropriate for it to ever be considered the kind of drug that should be mandated at all, any place, anywhere, anytime. All because so much of that concerns medical information and scientific information that YouTube does not allow to be discussed. They took on my small YouTube channel, they took down a video, struck it this week, that was from 16 months ago concerning just your legal rights concerning a lawsuit. And because any lawsuit's going to get into some of the medical disputes and controversies, they just struck it right away. And so for that reason, that's why all of that will be at vivabarneslaw.locals.com. All of the lawsuits that I'll be filing will also have links there. We can now at Locals upload PDFs. So there will be PDF uploads of the suits and complaints, all the ones that have been filed by others, the ones that have been filed by me. And yeah, they're coming. They're coming for firemen, for teachers, for cops, for workers. Tyson Foods might be sued by, with a very big class action coming soon in the next week or so, unless they correct their actions. Walt Disney, the Disney Corporation, is looking at, I'm looking at suing them, suing the cities of San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York. The taking action, if necessary, if the military does in fact order it, against the Defense Department. And so, and then of course, challenging all of it altogether, particularly for children in certain younger age groups, but ultimately for everybody on the FDA challenge, because one of the big problems is the FDA has refused to announce what their standard is. It was like,
and their standard for ultimate approval or their standard for interim emergency authorization use approval?
All of it. And those, what's their standard for determining safety? What's their standard for determining efficacy? What's their standard for determining necessity? What facts are they looking at? What facts do they consider relevant? How are they? What information do they consider pertinent? What stand? So, for example, is it a 1% risk? Is it a 5% risk? Is it a 10% risk? What's the risk of a severe adverse event from the vaccine? What's the percent for? And is that going to differentiate by group? So, for example, maybe for 16-year-olds, there's a whole different risk profile than there is for an 85-year-old. And shouldn't they know that? Shouldn't each one, and as part of the informed consent process, are they requiring fact sheets be given to people before they get the vaccine, which is supposed to be the informed consent enforcement process as part of the statute and the rules? Because we're hearing many people got the vaccine without knowing any of the information in the fact sheet, including some who were identified as being at risk under the vaccine fact sheet. So, I mean, every problem it is in looking at this so far by the FDA, every problem that you could imagine in the regulatory process. And this is, again, a case of legally what they look at is the process. They don't look at your conclusions because they're not here to second guess your conclusions. They're here to see, did you go through the right process to get to those conclusions? Did you consider all relevant facts? Did you provide an opportunity for people to comment and then answer those comments in a citizen petition process? Did you apply reason? Did you apply any decision making as part of your process? Something that's not supposed to be considered, such as political pressure, things, all of those things. Did they? And this process is the worst process for the approval of a vaccine I have ever seen in the history of the FDA. And I've been studying it now for a long time, going back to the history of the FDA. So that gives you an idea. When you can't even tell people what your standard is for determining safety, what your standard is for determining efficacy, what your standard is for determining necessity, what your standard is for determining effectiveness of alternatives, what your standard is for giving informed consent, then we're dealing in a standardless environment that is completely contrary to the whole point of both the Administrative Procedures Act governing agencies and the constitutional provisions to govern our government.
You know, and Robert, I'm going to read this super chat, then I'm going to ask you a question. Barnes, is there anything I can do to help? I'll be a grunt. I'll do whatever is necessary. Deliver documents, process. Thank you very much, Jasper Tones. But someone else said, you look tired. I don't think you look tired at all. I think you look determined now. And especially when you start talking about this. But do explain for people who don't understand how you operate, because you're not a one-man show. And I don't think people appreciate the system that you have to take these lawsuits and to file them in various states and various jurisdictions, if you don't mind explaining.
Yeah, sure. So for anybody out there that either wants to help, wants to be local counsel, it'd be, you know, I have about 25 states covered of local lawyers who are going to be assisting in these cases. We still need the other 25 covered, including Arkansas in particular at the moment. We got a lot of the big states covered. It's a lot of small states we still don't have. So it's local lawyers that all that will be asked of them is to be what's called pro hoc counsel, that in a state that I'm not licensed in, they agree to work with me so that I can work in that state and file suits in that state. Not much work, usually, you know, not too much. But then anybody who wants to volunteer, anybody who has a potential case, go to the law firm website. There's a contact page at BarnesLawLLP.com. There's a contact page. Use that. I know a lot of people have been reaching out through other forums, and I do follow everybody at Locals, but on like Twitter and other social media, I don't have time to go through all of that. So where if it goes through organized method through the contact page, that's organized. It's an automated system to make sure everybody gets it and the information is stored. And I know some people are wanting immediate responses. I will not be able to respond to everybody.
And people do. I get the messages from Locals. And so people saying, there's a few questions that come up frequently. How do I find the template for the employer letter? That's on the pinned board. I mean, you have to just ask anybody in the community.
Just go to vivabarneslaw.locals.com. At the top, it will be pinned an example of letters that have been successful for employees as to the vaccine mandate or as to religious objections to the vaccine mandate. Both are present, and many other people have utilized it to success. Clearly, this is a coordinated effort. The other terrifying thing is what was said to doctors in California is now spreading to even places like Arkansas. And it may be because big corporations are also putting pressure on state actors or getting the message out. But yeah, I have cases now where doctors have told their patients that because of their particular medical condition, they don't think they should take the vaccine. But the same doctor has told them they don't want to sign a medical exemption because they've been told they'll be put under immediate scrutiny by the state. So doctors are being intimidated into interfering with the patient-doctor relationship, which, by the way, is constitutionally protected, that patient-doctor relationship, to try to discourage the use of medical exemptions. And then several employers, like Tyson Foods, is deciding what religious beliefs it's okay for their employees to have. And so that if you have a pro-life belief and you're concerned about the vaccine because the vaccine, I won't get into the issues again. Go to vivabarneslaw.locals.com.
It involves
censoring information about that
too. It involves trace materials or materials from humans that are used in the development, research, or production. So I think we can leave it at that.
Precisely. And their employers are lying to people about that. They're saying that something was not done that in fact was done, and that I have all the medical evidence for that, the uncontroverted medical evidence. So. But again, all of that, vivabarneslaw.locals.com, that will be available. We'll be breaking down the suits as we file them. We'll break down some of the suits that have already been filed. There were suits filed this week or anticipated to be filed this week from the District of Columbia to Hawaii. Some of the Hawaiian union members or members of the board reached out to me. We had a discussion earlier this week, and they filed suit on Friday on behalf of 1,200 union members, because it was also a violation of their union contract and agreement. As a the governor's just issuing edicts like these are 16th century. I guess he thinks the king is back in Hawaii and he can just start issuing orders. And so there's going to be a lot of challenges on a lot of grounds on all these vaccine mandate issues. The big one will be with Children's Health Defense and Bobby Kennedy challenging the license altogether, that the FDA has not followed the rules they're supposed to follow, has not adapted the information they were supposed to adapt to, They have not even answered basic questions and basic comments in the citizen petition filed many months ago by the Children's Health Defense. And again, this is extraordinary. No drug like this has been approved in this time frame without answering comments from major citizen petitions. There will be signed declarations by leading doctors across the world that will be part of that case. So the that will be sort of the center case, but there'll be other cases challenging public accommodations under the Americans with Disabilities Act and conspiracy to commit battery. There'll be additional claims against employers under that and potentially religious rights claims because they're starting to what's supposed to happen is what's happening in the UK. You assert your religious exception, period. It's supposed to be no further investigation on that. That's been clear for quite a while. They're basically trying to remove people's ability. And this has been on the left for a couple of years now. There's been law review articles where they're like, we got to get rid of these religious objections, these conscientious objections. We can control medical exemptions by overruling doctors, which is what they're doing in New York. Big case pending before, about likely to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court on whether or not the state of New York can interfere with a patient doctor's doctors have signed medical exemptions for kids. And the state, some state bureaucrat who's not even a doctor, is overruling them. These are the people who believe in science. But it's just garbage. So all these cases are going to be fought, and it's going to be one heck of a legal battle.
Robert, two questions that come up pretty frequently. Okay, so we know that the manufacturers, the vaccine manufacturers, were given immunity. We know that by and large, the government has sovereign immunity for that which they do in the course of their governance, to the extent it's not criminal. If an employer requires an employee to get vaccinated or to do anything medically, let's make it more abstract. If an employer requires an employee under these circumstances to get a procedure and the employee suffers some sort of damage, can the employer be held to compensate the employee?
It's an unknown question at the moment. What is clear is that employers are not covered under the immunity statute. So the immunity statute attaches to any vaccine maker, any vaccine marketer, any vaccine manufacturer, any vaccine administrator, any vaccine medical professional that gives advice concerning it. It does not apply to any employer or anyone else. It doesn't apply to places of public accommodation, doesn't apply to educational institutions, all of whom may be liable for any injuries suffered. And again, there have been, even as a proportion, I was checking into the, well, go to vivabarneslaw.locals.com for that data.
I'm getting the same question in Canada. My understanding is that in general, the general rule was yes, but under these circumstances, I don't see how that's going to be possible or even logical given the government's position on all of this, which is we're requiring it. Everyone's basically got immunity. And how then could you hold the employer responsible for something that the manufacturers themselves cannot be held responsible for the same damages? So I don't know
how. Historically, if you condition access to the service, particularly when they're overriding like medical exemptions, like some of them are trying to do, then you could really be liable because you went against the employee's doctor's advice and still required they be given that information. And in my view, if you even have a doctor that won't sign the medical exemption, you can say you have the medical exemption, you've received advice from a doctor, but they don't want to have a retaliation against them. And in my view, that's going to put a lot of employers are assuming everything they watched on CNN is true. They assume that they have no risk from the vaccine having any adverse effects, and they assume they can only have upside. And they might want to research that data a little bit more. Because they might discover they're being stuck and left on the hook. And in particular, small and medium-sized businesses may not be able to absorb this.
It only fits into the existing, I won't call it a narrative, but the existing train of events that have been penalizing medium to small businesses since the beginning of this, but not the government, not big tech, and certainly not big pharma. The second question that comes up a lot is some people have been asking me, is it not breach of contract now to insist on this particular requirement, which might not have been provided for in the initial contract, to which I'm thinking it's either going to be force majeure or what are you going to do? Because how can an employer?
I think if you have a contract, you can absolutely bring a breach of contract suit because they're trying to unilaterally change and renegotiate the terms of the contract. And, you know, they should have, you know, they could have thought of this at the time when they did this. So they could claim that it's an emergency or something else and try to opt out of it. But, you know, good luck with that. I mean, a lot of insurance companies lost on some of those claims related to COVID. So the and there they would have to meet the evidentiary standard. And my view is they wouldn't, because nobody so far that I've talked to in this context that's thinking about issuing the mandate has reviewed any of the science about this. They have no idea what they're doing. They're just assuming the New York Times couldn't possibly mislead them. They're in for a real shock when it comes to a real trial. And as an example, you know, what they're really banking on is that the political prejudice of judges will keep them in, will protect them. And they may be right. There's plenty of people that are scared to take on these cases because they think it's too much of an uphill battle, too much of an underdog case. And so I understand why they think that way, because you have the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and this is going to be a big issue. You have judges issuing vaccine mandates. How is a judge going to be impartially preside over a vaccine mandate case when his very ruling could make him liable for his own actions in the same context? This has never happened before, to my knowledge. This is totally unprecedented. You have a bunch of courts that cannot be impartial about this because they would implicate themselves, because they're making the same mistake other governments and employers are making. And it's amazing. And they're totally accustomed to no pushback at all. I'll get randomly lectured by some random court that says, okay, we're going to do masks throughout the trial. Well, I'm going to start objecting. I mean, who knows what that looks like? I mean, does that impact the jury? We have no idea. We know it, you know, it limits their, does it mislead them into thinking your clients to say in a criminal case more guilty, or a defendant case more guilty because they're masked, because of the underlying unconscious association with masks? Who knows? Are you getting an impartial jury pool when you have all this paranoia about the pandemic? Who, judges haven't even thought about it. Be that they are such a tiny little echo chamber, they have not thought at all about their political prejudice, about their personal bias, and other things. And I'm going to be challenging all of it. So we'll see how it happens. But their challenge has to be made, no matter what the odds may be.
You know, I don't know if you're following. Well, you do follow because it comes from my Twitter feed, but in Quebec, François Legault is unveiling the vaccine passport, rolling out the vaccine passport September 1st. And it's a vaccine passport. It's going to be a QR code on your phone. You go into a restaurant, they're going to scan you, make sure you're double vaxxed, fully vaxxed, whatever that term means. And, you know, you talk about it not going through any sort of public debate, any legislative process, any show us the evidence, let's have a discussion and ask the questions. And apparently, I haven't heard the exact quote, but it was quoted in CTV, which is government subsidized news. François Legault, the premier of Quebec, says that the reason why he doesn't want to go through the legislative process is he doesn't want Quebec citizens being exposed to misinformation or to conspiracy theories. And this is like, it is difficult not to get discouraged and not to get, however you feel about all these issues, not to get discouraged at the way the government and the way the courts and the way employers are taking this as to be effectively, it's a massive, I don't want to call it mass psychosis, but it's like everybody now is just panicking and going in the same direction without the second thought. And the people leading the charge have immunity, and everybody following, I guess, thinks that they have both, they're going to have the same immunity, both financial and moral, from what's going to happen or what might happen, or from what this is going to do to our constitutional rights. But it's like, it's the same thing in the States. We're just, I think we might be a little ahead of the States in Canada. So, you know, you're looking into the future to some extent.
It's an attempt to reinstate the fascism of the 1940s. The state and corporations have complete control over everything. Your speech, your body, your autonomy, your freedom, your travel, you name it. And that's why it has to be fought back at every level possible, legally.
Is the FDA trying to rush approval of these jabs to this September in order to avoid all of the lawsuits?
Yes. They're trying to approve novel drugs using novel technologies for a novel virus that they have never been able to successfully use as a vaccine for in American or world medical history. And I mean, again, average length of time for a drug vaccine to be approved as a drug to be approved as a vaccine is 12 years. In Jacobson, the Supreme Court, which was a eugenics decision, the foundation of the eugenics era. But even that court said it was critical that that smallpox vaccine had been approved of and used without problems for more than 100 years. This comes nowhere near that level of medical scrutiny. And the key has been big tech and big media and big government colluding to suppress information that could expose issues related to this. And that's why, you know, that's the great utility of locals and why we created it in the first place, is precisely for issues like this. About half the country has no clue. They would fail a basic literacy test concerning COVID. They would fail a basic literacy test concerning this vaccine. They would fail a basic literacy test about how the process is supposed to work in the first place. And to Dershowitz's credit, who's a huge champion of the vaccine, he said that no vaccine should be mandated that doesn't go through legislative scrutiny first. And so he has stuck with what he told us during our debate with him. He said that, you know, that yes, it has to meet the legislative process. Yes, it has to meet a certain high evidentiary standard, substantial risk of severe harm, and that evidence has to be tested both in the legislative process and in the courts of law. And this is a guy who's a huge vaccine champion. So that is what the law requires. The only question is, will our judges enforce it?
It's already one step too far when our politicians are not enforcing it. And TM reminds me, yeah, there was also the announcement for mandatory vaccines for planes and trains, plus federal departments. Don't forget that political parties are joining the bandwagon. This is another thing that I have to get off my chest. When the liberal governments and, you know, the Democrats in the states, when pushing all of these plans, also purport to be, you know, the party of tolerance, the not racist party. Just imagine that we know the demographics of who's getting vaccinated and who's not. It's even more pronounced in the states, but it follows a similar trend in Canada. You are now saying people who are not vaccinated cannot get on public transport. You're now saying basically it's going to affect disproportionately and disparately certain demographics. It's not going to affect the wealthiest of the wealthy who have their own methods of transport, who have their own private jets. It's not going to affect the government. It's going to affect already the most vulnerable, who have already been most highly impacted by this in Canada, and I suspect it's the same in the States. And it's predictable, and it's unavoidable, and it's coming from the very same parties who purport to be the champions of minority rights. It's hypocrisy of the worst order, but it's also just it's incompetent or worse governance, that they know what's going to happen, but they cloak all of it in benevolence, and they're going to impose these vaccine passports that are going to have disparate effects on specific minority communities, and they know it, and they don't care, and nobody calls them out on it because they bought the media through government subsidies.
Well, that would be one of the subclasses, like against Tyson Foods, against City of New York, is that this is racial discrimination in violation of various either constitutional or statutory provisions, either federally or state or both, because this disproportionately impacts people of certain racial groups, and they can't justify it. You know, the way I know some people don't like disparate impact interpretation of laws related to racial discrimination, but the reality is most people don't admit that they're racially discriminating. So disparate impact has always been a very effective way to root out racial stereotyping and racial prejudice and racial disparate effects that cannot be justified. They get the opportunity to say, okay, it has this disparate impact, but not only can that not be our motivation, we can show you it's not protectual by how business necessary our provision is. They get that opportunity. They just can't meet that standard here because they haven't even looked at the evidence themselves. They have not done that at all. You know, and this happens at even high-ranking executive levels. And, I mean, people are looking at suit, high-ranking lawyers and high-ranking law firms, because the big law firms are trying to compel it on their other lawyers with even less justification and even fewer accommodations that are easily available for those people. Everybody that really what they assume is all the stakeholders agree. They assume their little echo chamber. This is our first major test of what does massively censored media look like. When big tech colludes with big media, colludes with big government to suppress completely. I mean, there were little examples of that during the campaign, the Hunter Biden laptop issue, et cetera. But the COVID-19 issues, and especially around vaccines, that's the biggest and broadest use of big tech, big media, big government collusion to suppress adequate and honest information. I'm sure some judges, when they're going to be seeing the complaints that we're filing, despite their biases and prejudices that they come in with, are going to be shocked at some of the allegations and the sources of those allegations, that the sources of those allegations in many cases are federal government documents, that the sources of those allegations are peer-reviewed published medical journals, that the source of those allegations are some of the leading doctors, and including in the vaccine context, in the world. They're not going to anticipate that because also they don't know their history. They don't know the history of repeated, you know, 1950s, rush to polio vaccine led to massive number of deaths here in the United States. Another rush polio vaccine in Belgian Africa, in the Belgian Congo, late 1950s. Journalists attributed that to be the cause of the AIDS virus decades later. That's an example where you don't see the bad consequences maybe until 25 years after the fact. That's the risk with these things if they're not done right. 1976 swine flu, United States, rushed vaccine, total disaster, total debacle. We've had a bunch of those, more than people know, more than people realize. And and because there's been complete media suppression of this information, then people don't know what they should know and that they need to know. And that'll be part of this process as well. Some of these, every case we bring is intended for both the court of law and the court of public opinion, because the court of public opinion is going to have a big influence on whether these laws and rules and restrictions go forward. By the way, you're on mute.
Yeah, it's exactly why certain social media tech giants block the discussion, any form of it, under the pretext of misinformation. It's exactly why our own premier of our province says he doesn't want to have the public debate because he doesn't want to expose people to misinformation. I was having a discussion with someone where I said, where I characterize what's going on here as tyranny and dictatorship. And someone says, well, that's a little exaggerated. And I said, what else would you describe a government passing what is effectively legislation without going through the legislative process? And they said, well, they were democratically elected in the first place. And I said, well, I hate to draw analogies, but so were a number of other dictators throughout the history of humankind, were democratically elected in the first place, but abused of the system in order to stay in power indefinitely, and then started imposing rules without any legislative process. That is what it is. And like, it's as though because it can never be the same as it ever was in the past, that it can never be compared to it. And that's why Mark Twain said that history doesn't repeat, but it tends to rhyme. And we've got a lot of rhyming phrases now with what have come up in the past. And it's scary. I'm listening to you talk, Robert, and it's encouraging that you're going to take the lawsuits. I don't care if people disagree with you or people think that you're, you know, I don't know how anyone can disagree with certain principles here, which is proof, safety, efficacy. And when the FDA has had historical standards that they might just brush aside, it's a problem. I don't know how anyone can disagree with that. Whatever your positions are on other things, it looks like the system is being gamed right now in a way that discredits the institution that was there to protect the people. Okay, so I'm excited. We'll see what the lawsuits are, and we'll see if we can't talk about them here. Rumble and Locals have a union now, an unholy union, which might allow us to have these live streams on Locals the way we have them elsewhere. What do we move on?
I mean, good transition into one vaccine suit. So the state of Florida passed a law prohibiting vaccine passports, and a federal court struck down that law this week. This is how eager these courts are to ramrod, you know, to force foreign chemicals into kids' bodies all across, into other human beings' bodies all across the country. The court ruled that it was a free speech First Amendment violation to prohibit vaccine passports.
Now,
most ludicrous interpretations I've ever seen.
I've read some analyses on this. This was one where I couldn't understand the argument, and I couldn't even begin to do justice to it in a vlog. But the argument that was that it was a free speech issue of whom exactly? What is the element of free speech here that is being infringed upon?
Companies have a First Amendment right to say papers, please. And if you don't allow cruise companies or any other corporation or business to say papers, please, then that you're restricting their First Amendment rights.
But
it's
the kind of argument
only somebody like David French could think was a good argument.
But what now? Freedom of speech requires some value, some artistic or expression of meaningful thought or creative thought. What is the expressive thought that is being protected there by that First Amendment protection?
Papers, please. it's ridiculous. I kept trying to realize, like, I can't figure this out. And I mean, I saw how it was clearly, if you read the rest of the decision, it's purely political motivated. It's a judge who loves the idea of vaccine passports, who doesn't want states to allow, doesn't want anybody to even be able to prohibit them. That's how eager this judge is to enforce things, making up facts that don't exist, frankly, in many instances. And wanted to shove vaccine passports down the throat of the people of Florida. And so decided that somehow the First Amendment, it's like the way New York Times thinks. The First Amendment only protects us, but no one else. We're in some sacred position that when the founders were writing the First Amendment, they meant to say the right of the New York Times to lie, not the right of free press. You know, that's what's in the imagination of all these little millennial kid reporters who are a disgrace to the history of journalism. It's the same mindset. And so I read it three times trying to figure out, because I was looking at it and thinking, I wonder if I can steal this somehow and say that, the vaccine passport laws violate First Amendment, because if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander.
Well, that was what I was just about to say, is that my First Amendment right also involves the right not to be compelled to say certain things. So if someone's asking me private information that I don't want to disclose, setting aside all of the medical issues, where's my First Amendment right to not answer your question that would ask me to divulge private information of a medical nature?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm going to inquire. It's such a stretch. It's hard to argue. And you know, these same courts, this same judge, when someone makes that argument, will make the flip claim.
Yeah,
All of a sudden, the First Amendment will magically no longer apply. And these Obama appointees are the worst at this. Come up with something that sounds like the law and say that's why you can't do it. And I, the judge, have unilateral power. Like you had judges in Texas and Oklahoma doing that this week on a range of grounds, overruling governors, overturning state legislatures on grounds that really are not appropriate judicial supervision. Well, watch them try to run and hide and cower like cowards when it comes to either an election dispute or it comes to these FDA challenges. So they're so political that they've disappointed. But I think this was a very political decision, but you're right. If there's a right of a cruise company to say papers, please, then is it their right of ordinary people to say no papers, please?
It is obviously going to get appealed. I mean, I've read several articles and reviews where all of which, and even coming from sort of more centrist publications, say that the judgment does not hold water, cannot hold water, and is legally untenable. It does get appealed, or has it been?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The state of Florida made clear that this was a challenge to the state of Florida. So the Governor DeSantis said he was absolutely going to raise it. Now, some fair points made in the case is that the state of Florida should have expanded the vaccine passport limitation. They told their constituents they did one thing when they actually did something else. They protected the number of places that cannot compel vaccine passports or vaccine mandates or vaccine information. Very limited in almost all of these laws. So they classic Republicans, they exempted pretty much all employers from these provisions so that employers in Florida can demand vaccine passports for as a condition of employment under that law. And the judge made the point of how hypocritical the law was. And that point was a fair point by the judge. And it's because Republicans were busy protecting they only wanted to limit vaccine passports on communities and constituencies that are not big Republican donor groups. And that's why we got a law that lacked consistency and thoroughness.
Now, I think the judgment did speak to this or at least raise it. But what of the argument that even if the judge said, okay, fine, Florida's within its rights to impose this anti-passport, I guess, legislation. What happens when the ship gets out into international waters? They then are not bound by Florida law. They can then say papers, please, with the appropriate sanctions on the passengers who now cannot invoke this Florida statute to refuse.
The thing there was, I thought the cruise ships that filed suit, I didn't think their argument was as strong in that context. They can just say, in order to access this port, you have to provide vaccine documents when we get to that port. Before you can go to the port, and they have restrictions on that already. So they made it sound like, oh my goodness, our whole system falls apart economically because these other countries are forcing us to do things. But that has always been true in the cruise industry. There's always other countries that have different limitations on who can onboard at different port locations and who cannot. So they've been dealing with that for as long as the cruise industry has existed. So the idea that somehow this one requirement made it impossible for cruise ships to operate at foreign ports was really not being honest by the cruise ship industry. That's why most of the cruise ships liked this law by Florida and liked it when Florida won the case against the CDC on their behalf about being able to mandate this precondition. It's only a few cruise ship industries, a few businesses that filed this suit. And it's and that tells you all you need to know. If this was really a universal problem, then all the cruise ship, no cruise ship industry would have joined the state of Florida in the first suit against the CDC. And all of them would have joined this suit against the state of Florida here. In fact, most of them were on the side of the state of Florida in this related litigation. So that tells you this was not as economically necessary as the judge tried to pretend that it was.
Okay, interesting. What do we segue into now?
I think that, interstate travel, one last component. People have been asking questions because it leaked that the Biden administration was considering two things, and I consider the second one much scarier. The first one was requiring a vaccine as a precondition of travel between the states. The Privileges and Immunities Clause of the U.S. Constitution forbids states from restricting this. Presumably that applies to the U.S. government as well, the federal government as well. I think they leaked it to test what people would do and say and how they would respond. And they got so much pushback so quickly in the court of public opinion that by the end of the day, they shot down their own trial balloon and said that they're not right now going to do any kind of limitation on travel between the states, because that would raise a lot of legal issues and upset a lot of people within a lot of states to not allow travel between states on that condition.
And it's an amazing thing because it's like we're sort of like the states, just like the little brother who has somewhat different rules. Like, so we've had this now. We've had the maritime bubble where in order to get into the maritime provinces, you had to show, at the very least for me at one time, proof of vaccination. Now they're talking about train, planes, and not your own personal automobile showing proof of vaccinations for interprovincial travel within the country. We have a constitution. It contains very similar provisions to your constitution, the right for interprovincial travel, the right to take up and leave in any province, to leave the country when you want, except we have that Article 1 that says it can be, you know, these rights can be violated in as much as can be justified in a free and democratic society. Canadians have, by and large, not just not fought back against these measures, but welcomed them. You know, I won't say everyone I met in New Brunswick either opposed or supported these measures. I found a good mix. Some people liked the bubble that was created by these interprovincial restrictions on travel, but you don't put up with that in the States for one second. And maybe I'm wrong for admiring that, but I admire that. It doesn't lead to what we have now here, but your government is still testing it.
Yes. So, I mean, in my view, that's clearly a fundamental right, and they can't meet strict scrutiny that should apply to any fundamental right. It's like interfering with children, in terms of mask mandates. That deals with the parents' right to have control and care and make medical decisions for their children is a fundamental right. They have to meet strict scrutiny if they're going to interpose or invade that right or limit or constrict or restrict that right. So I think that they would be in real, there would be an immediate suit if they did so, and they would be on weak legal standing, in my view. But the second one is even scarier, which is as a trial balloon, they are considering denying medical care and reimbursement for medical care if to people that are unvaccinated.
Yep, George Takei.
That's just shocking.
George Takei just put out a tweet to this effect today. He says, there's no reason why anyone who willingly does not get vaxxed to get services by priority to someone else, effectively saying, if you decide not to get vaccinated and you get sick, he was saying you shouldn't get priority treatment over someone else. There's a triage system in a hospital for a reason, but it does sound an awful lot like if you make a decision we don't agree with, we're going to bump you to the bottom of the line for medical treatment. And I said to George in a tweet that he'll never see. I said, it's very nice of you. Now do overweight people. Now do smokers. Now do drinkers. Now do kids who bump their heads on bikes when they weren't wearing helmets. Do people who have unprotected intercourse and contract viruses. You know, do any number of morally shocking analogies where the logic would be the same, but you'd be called a bigot for even suggesting it. But no, all of a sudden it's so politically expedient to not just wish death on your political adversaries, but to actually hasten it by not treating them. Carry on while I go get the dog, Robert, as to what the likelihood of anything like that passing is, because it's shocking to me.
Well, I mean, they would never get it through Congress. So the only way they can do it is these continued executive orders and diktats and decrees as if they're royal governors. And so that's where the risk is posed and where it continues to be posed. And that presents additional constitutional grounds to challenge it, because it's a violation of the checks and balances between the tripartite system of government we're supposed to have here, and it is constitutionally consecrated that they wish to basically tear apart overnight. And it's a good transition into the other area where there are a lot of suits have now been filed from New Jersey to Nevada. There's now multiple challenges to mask mandates. There's a New Jersey class action that's been filed against the governor related to the mask mandates on school children. There's now been a class action filed in Nevada against the governor there based on his mask mandate for school children. And the grounds is that it interferes with the parents' rights to care and control and custody of their children, particularly as to medical matters, which is a fundamental right protected under the Due Process Clause of the Constitution. It is a violation in some cases, if there's no religious exemption of parents' religious rights, that's been raised in certain contexts. But it's a violation in certain cases of the method of which the enforcement order came down, that it did not go through the legislature. So that is being challenged. But the other interesting challenge is they're really making a strong, robust First Amendment, and they're challenging on equal protection, because it's only school children that get the mask mandate in certain instances, not everybody in a public gathering in some of these circumstances. So school children are being treated worse than other people in public gatherings, even though school children benefit less from the mask mandate and are less at risk from COVID than our broader population. But most importantly, they've made a good challenge on First Amendment grounds, that it's a violation of speech and associational rights because it limits your ability for children to have nonverbal communication. And how important that is for associational purposes, expressive purposes, fundamental speech and liberty purposes. So they're bringing a First Amendment challenge that's pretty good. And they go through all the medical data and other literature about how important this is to children for associational learning and other purposes that the First Amendment was meant to protect. Because you can only communicate with your eyes. You can't communicate with your facial features.
Now, I'll play devil's advocate for 30 seconds. That argument, by analogy, one could say, well, by forcing me into a uniform or by forcing me to wear any clothes whatsoever, you limit my ability to speak with my body.
In terms of clothing. But clothing has always had more limited than this, because the big difference is clothing doesn't limit your body language, whereas this does. And so the question becomes, because body language is such an integral component, particularly in schools where you can't talk while the teacher's talking, but you can make gestures and whatnot, that it's very restrictive of core First Amendment rights. And to me, it was a rather persuasive argument. So that if you establish that they're interfering with the First Amendment right, then they definitely have to meet strict scrutiny as well. And their point is that there isn't clear and can... It's not, not only is there not clear and convincing evidence that this is medically necessary, this medical Sharia law is what it is, but in my view, it's the same thing, wearing the thing over your mouth, of your face and body, so you can't express yourself because of somebody else's political beliefs or somebody else's medical interpretation or gender ideas. It's just, different excuse, but the same logic being applied. And the assumption has always been that this kind of medical Sharia law would never be constitutional in the United States. It's one thing to have very limited standards like prohibition on nudity, prohibition on obscenity, things like, and in even the school clothing code context, they've had to be careful about how they do that. They can't, so in the public school environments, mostly private schools, only a limited number of public schools have a strict dress code. And usually in that instance, they can justify why they've chosen what they've chosen, as opposed to completely limiting facial expression solely on the grounds that it might limit the spread of COVID in a group that is at extremely low risk from COVID. It's not narrowly tailored, not even necessarily a compelling public interest given the low health risk to kids.
Well, what I find amazing is that, over the last 2 years, I don't know why the emphasis has not been on rapid testing and early diagnosis, so that presumably would be a more effective means of stopping any propagation than forcing people who don't have COVID to wear face masks, because I think we can all agree on the science, face masks do nothing on someone who does not have COVID. So the only question is whether or not it does anything on someone who is asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, whereas if you had rapid testing, presumably you can get past that stage such that you wouldn't need to compel these things in the first place. And it's an interesting thing that someone said the deaf and the blind are, you know, there are a number of issues for autistic children, deaf children. The argument that it negatively impacts the hand or the disabled is the same argument for I forgot the other way it goes. Oh, in terms of compelling vaccination, whereas if you have a medical condition that could excuse you or that can get you out of it, those are the clear examples. Have there been any big successes for special needs, the disabled, people with medical conditions, to successfully challenge any of these mandates, or do they just drop these mandates as relates to those exceptional circumstances to get out of the debate?
There's a range of ADA type laws that apply to educational institutions as well. And in my view, sometimes it's in the ADA, sometimes it's in an analogous law, federal or state law. And I believe it applies here to everybody, not just people who have a different disability, because they're treating these children as publicly as physically limited if they're unmasked somehow. And in my view, that's assuming a physical limitation. And so the ADA analogous laws should apply. These current stat cases that have been brought don't bring that challenge, but I'll be bringing it in the vaccine mandate context and may add in here or there a mask mandate challenge as well. Particularly, it appears in my home state origin state, Tennessee, they're considering it in Nashville. And I think it was Matt Walsh plus Clay Travis, you know, went in and denounced the school boards for their absurd ideas. Though, you know, Sebastian Gorka shared a doctor's statement, I believe, I forget where, but it was either a school board or local community where he went through all the medical issues that he saw with the assumptions being made. And not only has it been banned from YouTube, to my knowledge, or they've tried to, but Twitter has posted on it saying that it's misinformation. It fails to explain how anything he says is misinformation. It's, in my view, a defamation action by Twitter, which it's grown accustomed to abusing. All these big tech people have. And, you know, that's probably a good bridge into the many defamation cases this week.
Let's start with Nunes, because it's an interesting case. And someone posted a comment. I forget where it was. It might have been on Locals. It might have been in the comment section. Long story short for Nunes, everybody, he's suing the Washington Post because they ran nothing shy of a hit piece saying that Nunes supported Trump's baseless comments that...
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either," available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening. take it. I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And we are back. This is Bill Grant, temporary fill-in host, producer. I'm about to sneeze. Almost sneeze. Still about to sneeze. Filling in for Mitchell Bupp, who was filling in for Jim Fetzer of The Raw Deal. This is The Raw Deal on Revolution Radio at revolution.radio. Listener-supported station. Mitch has a video up. We are listening to, you have been listening to, basically, well, it's a long title, but it has Robert Barnes in it with Viva Frey, I think that's how you pronounce his name. Basically, if you want to know the long, if you want to go to YouTube, listen later, or now, as you feel fit, EP 74, Free Speech, Eighth Amendment, MSM Losers, DOJ Misconduct, Biden's Immigration, Viva and Barnes. That would be the title. So it's on the Viva Frey site. That would be like the person's, you know, his sort of partner's site. And now I may have to go run to sneeze, etc. I will begin the video again. Good luck to Jim Fetzer. Again, he is out today. Not sure what anyone knows about that yet. I'll just let them continue explaining that on the next show. But Mitch needs to go out and help his girlfriend with some personal family issues. So, I return you back to the video, and maybe might take calls at the bottom of the half hour. I'm not really sure. I had an early, I woke up extra early today and had less coffee
And now I'm sneezing. So I'm just going to play this for now. And I love Robert Barnes. I don't know too much about Viva Frey myself. That's F-R-E-I. Viva is just like you would expect, V-I-V-A. So, all right, here we go.
He was wiretapped in 2017 when the Post itself in 2017 said no, Nunes disagreed with Trump, said that he wasn't wiretapped by the purest definition.
In fact, I'll bring this back just a few minutes to basically catch up anyone, just to let you leave off where it was finishing up so you kind of recapture the moment. Here we go again.
Just drop these mandates as relates to those exceptional circumstances to get out of the debate.
There's a range of ADA type laws that apply to educational institutions as well. And in my view, sometimes it's in the ADA, sometimes it's in an analogous law, federal or state law. And I believe it applies here to everybody, not just people who have a different disability, because they're treating these children as publicly, as physically limited if they're unmasked somehow. And so the, in my view, that's assuming a physical limitation. And so the ADA analogous law should apply. These current stat cases that have been brought don't bring that challenge, but I'll be bringing it in the vaccine mandate context and may add in here or there a mask mandate challenge as well. Particularly, it appears in my home state origin state, Tennessee, they're considering it in Nashville. And I think it was Matt Walsh plus Clay Travis, you know, went in and denounced the school boards for their absurd ideas. Though, you know, Sebastian Gorka shared a doctor's statement, I believe, I forget where, but it was either a school board or local community where he went through all the medical issues that he saw with the assumptions being made. And not only has it been banned from YouTube, to my knowledge, or they've tried to, but Twitter has posted on it saying that it's misinformation. It fails to explain how anything he says is misinformation. It's, in my view, a defamation action by Twitter, which it's grown accustomed to abusing. All these big tech people have. And, you know, that's probably a good bridge into the many defamation cases this week.
Let's start with Nunes, because it's an interesting case. And someone posted a comment. I forget where it was. It might have been on Locals. It might have been in the comment section. Long story short for Nunes, everybody, he's suing the Washington Post because they ran nothing shy of a hit piece saying that Nunes supported Trump's baseless comments that he was wiretapped in 2017, when the Post itself in 2017 said no, Nunes disagreed with Trump, said that he wasn't wiretapped by the purest definition of the term wiretapped, but rather he was caught up in surveillance, which everyone knows now to be true. They referred to the claim as baseless, Nunes supporting this baseless claim in a hit piece suggesting that Nunes had something of an illicit midnight run with Michael Ellis, who was appointed general counsel for the NSA. Nunes sued. Washington Post issued a garbage retraction in which they said the midnight run, Nunes says, occurred during the daylight hours, and they corrected in a very weak way their prior misinformation. Bottom line, Washington Post asked for a motion to dismiss, lost on the motion to dismiss, but succeeded on the dismissal of the aspects of the claim based on negligence. More, it doesn't really matter much because Nunes is going to get to continue with the lawsuit. But the judge said, basically confirmed that prima facie, it's not on the merits, to survive a motion to dismiss, calling something baseless, calling an allegation baseless, could suffice for an action in defamation, which is very interesting. And someone said, now all these politicians have to go back and find articles where they referred to their statements as baseless, where they weren't, and file suit. Now, I like the decision. The reasoning was good in that the judge said, basically, for the actual malice, a jury could come to the conclusion that there was actual malice because of the fact that the Washington Post basically contradicted their own prior reporting in order to run the hit piece on Nunes. Do you think it's good law? Do you think it was a little bit too pro Nunes? And I didn't dive into the judge. What was the political appointment history of the judge? Do you know?
Well, it's interesting. It's the same judge who issued the Dominion decisions. He's got both.
Okay.
So it's the same judge who presided over the Nunes versus Washington Post case is presiding over the Dominion versus Sidney Powell versus Rudy Giuliani versus Michael Lindell case, issued big decisions this week in all of those cases. And so the he had choice of law questions, venue transfer questions, personal jurisdiction questions, substantive defamation law questions. So, I mean, a lot of legal issues to deal with. And I think for the most part came to a decision that won't be reversed on appeal. I'll put it that way. He's a late Trump appointee, though he comes from the very pro-government side of the equation legally. So he's going to be a Federalist Society type judge, not as bad as Barrett, which people got to see this week. Barrett was the decided unilaterally to not allow the Indiana University challenge, the challenge to the Indiana University's vaccine mandate, unilaterally said that no emergency injunctive relief would be heard by the Supreme Court, when normally that's transferred to the whole court. Some of us had predicted this is how Barrett would handle these kind of questions. Took a lot of criticism from a lot of people on the right about it. And a lot of those people on the right should be busy apologizing to everybody out there right now, but instead they're hiding. But a lot of people on the right keep pushing these Federalist Society nominees and keep getting burned and then going, oh, how did that happen?
Yeah,
and then they go and do the same thing again.
People in the chat early on were not happy with ACB. Maybe we'll come back to that in a second, actually, if there's more to elaborate. But in this particular decision, it will not get overturned in appeal. This is the same judge who allowed Dominion suit to proceed against Lindell and Sidney Powell. And full disclosure, this, I think it shows consistent reasoning. I think those lawsuits should continue. I mean, I think they've alleged enough. I come from a jurisdiction in Quebec where premature dismissal on a motion to dismiss is referred to as the ultimate sanction. And the judges here only grant it really, really, really exceptionally before depositions or before discoveries, a little more liberally after discoveries if there's like overt contradictions that come out through deposition. But I come from a jurisdiction where they never get tossed and it always goes to the merits to a flaw. But when I've got exposed to the American system, I notice that they get tossed early, in my mind, to a flaw. So I appreciate that Dominion should go forward. And I think that Nunes should go forward.
I think that, yes, substantively, it was a very good ruling because all these media places have been playing games where they lie about somebody but say, nah, really, it was just an opinion and you could have interpreted it differently. But when you choose to use language like baseless, when you choose to use language like meritless, when you choose to use language like no evidence or without evidence, they're now going to start getting burned because that was the point of the judge. He's like, that's a factual statement you're making. That's no longer a statement of opinion. You're saying there's absolutely no evidence that supports his claims. You're saying he's saying something that he knows not to be true.
Okay, I'm just pausing this for 1 second just to clarify. Frey is for Free Height, and I believe he's running for Parliament. I forget which exactly I've been informed. Things are a little hectic right now, kind of in and out, and kind of looking at the chat a little bit. But I'll continue this. I'll go back about a minute to so you can regain again. This is Bill Grant temp fill in for the second hour. Basically, that's about it. So good luck with Jim. He does have COVID, according to the so-called tests. I was wasn't sure if I should say that or not. I didn't know if that was already known. And of course, his wife got the jab, as you guys know in chat there at least. Okay, back to the video. More than likely to take calls if some of the callers we know, I kind of know, do want to come in and talk about pretty much anything. You guys, you know what Jim's all about and all the basic stuff on Rev Radio either way. Okay, going back to the video right now. I just got to reset it a couple minutes back.
The whole court. Some of us had predicted this is how Barrett would handle these kind of questions. Took a lot of criticism from a lot of people on the right about it. And a lot of those people on the right should be busy apologizing to everybody out there right now. But instead, they're hiding. But a lot of people on the right keep pushing these Federalist Society nominees and keep getting burned and then going, oh, how did that happen?
Yeah,
and then they go and do the same thing again.
People in the chat early on were not happy with ACB. Maybe we'll come back to that in a second, actually, if there's more to elaborate. But in this particular decision, it will not get overturned in appeal. This is the same judge who allowed Dominion's suit to proceed against Lindell and Sidney Powell. And full disclosure, this I think it shows consistent reasoning. I think those lawsuits should continue. I mean, I think they've alleged enough. I come from a jurisdiction in Quebec where premature dismissal on a motion to dismiss is referred to as the ultimate sanction. And the judges here only grant it really, really, really exceptionally. Before depositions or before discoveries, a little more liberally after discoveries if there's like overt contradictions that come out through deposition. But I come from a jurisdiction where they never get tossed and it always goes to the merits to a flaw. But when I've got exposed to the American system, I notice that they get tossed early, in my mind, to a flaw. So I appreciate that Dominion should go forward. And I think that Nunes should go forward.
I think that, yes, substantively, it was a very good ruling because all these media places have been playing games where they lie about somebody but say, nah, really, it was just an opinion and you could have interpreted it differently. But when you choose to use language like baseless, when you choose to use language like meritless, when you choose to use language like no evidence or without evidence, they're now going to start getting burned because that was the point of the judge. He's like, that's a factual statement you're making. That's no longer a statement of opinion. You're saying there's absolutely no evidence that supports his claims. You're saying he's saying something that he knows not to be true. That's a defamatory statement and can be actionable. And maybe you can prove that you issued corrections and retractions that mitigate actual malice, but that's for trial or later on post-discovery, not for pretrial.
But or you then get into the motivated reasoning of the judge who dismissed Candace Owens' lawsuit, where they said when the fact checker says hoax alert, they don't mean hoax alert. They just mean read with more caution. I mean, that's why there are two lines of reasoning that are fundamentally mutually incompatible. I prefer this judge who says when you make a fact check statement, it's a factual statement. You're saying baseless is not opinion. It means as a matter of fact, there is nothing to support it, no evidence. But then you get these other, I'm going to call them wonky judges, like in Candace Owens saying hoax alert from a fact checker is not a defamatory statement of fact. It's just read with more caution. Where do these all get reconciled? Because you get these wildly varying judgments depending on jurisdiction. Where is the uniformity or top court reconciliation of the principles?
There should be a little bit more clear standards. To me, the decisions in the Nunes and Dominion cases by the same judge articulated pretty well the standards. The only issue I would have had disagreement on was venue, on the Dominion cases. But otherwise, he had pretty good defamation-specific standards that conforms to the law and understood it pretty well. The problem is as long as there's discretion there, you're going to have judges making politically motivated decisions. Where they decide no reasonable juror could conclude something that everybody knows a reasonable juror could conclude.
My first exposure to this was with the Sandman case, where the judge made the list of statements, not of and about salmon. And I was like, no, when you say not of and about salmon, that's a jury question. That's not a legal question. But I think a lot of these have been dismissed way too early. It's good to see some of these going to the merits. I very much think that everyone should get their day in court, which means not getting dismissed on a 12B6 motion to dismiss. The aspect of Nunes, where he alleged negligence. Now, I forget the details of the negligence, but the negligence side gets dismissed. What's the basis? What's the rationale? And how do you feel about the negligence side getting dismissed, but not the defamation side?
There's no negligent defamation unless you're not a public figure. So the lawyers that Nunes has have had a lot of, let's just say they haven't been real successful, and some of us have not been big fans of some of their work. So that I think they caught a good judge, because negligent defamation is something I didn't see how it could be alleged, right? I mean, he's clearly a public figure.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand that. And so that was always going to be dismissed. And luckily they caught a judge that didn't hold that against them, that they filed something that most lawyers would know not to file. So going on to Dominion, all those cases are not only marching on, they're staying in D.C. Now, Scott Adams, someone asked Scott Adams the question, could this be what Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and Mike Lindell want? Because now they're entitled to discovery from Dominion. In part, that may be the case. They definitely are now entitled to discovery to prove their arguments, just as Patrick Byrne and One America News Network are, because they just got sued as well. And on the same grounds that Powell, Giuliani, and Lindell could not dodge discovery, Patrick Byrne won't be able to dodge discovery, but all four will be entitled to it. They had suggested beforehand that they wanted to be sued so they could get discovery, but they didn't behave that way once the suit got filed. They were basically screaming, please don't have the case heard here. Please have it transferred. Please have it dismissed.
Look, this is where when you want to get into the motivations and all the things, you're going to say somebody who wants to believe the plan is going to say they had to file the motion to dismiss so that when the motion to dismiss gets dismissed and the action can proceed, Dominion cannot then say we're not going to submit to deposition or we're not going to communicate certain documents because we don't have to, or we sued you, so we get to limit sort of what you get discovery to. Some people are going to say they're going to read it the way they want to, which is they had to do this, so now Dominion loses an argument to limit the scope of the discovery because they succeeded on their opposition to the motion to dismiss. In my mind is you have to make the motion to dismiss argument regardless, because it's I guess if you want to proceed, it's a win-win, because either the lawsuit gets dismissed and it's a win, or the lawsuit continues and it's a win. You get to go to deposition, which is what everyone wanted. But look, it was par for the course. Nobody should make anything more of the fact that they sought the dismissal in terms of the broader plan that they stated from the beginning.
I mean, my own view is I don't think this was part of their plan personally, but maybe it was. They will be entitled now to discovery. That will go both ways, of course. The big motion they lost was the motion to transfer, because now all of these cases will, once they get to a jury trial, they will be heard by a DC jury. So they're completely screwed there, unless they beg the judge later on to, you know, expand the jury pool to or transfer the case because of jury bias issues. And maybe they'll be able to get that. But right now, the only upside for them is discovery. Otherwise, they're at serious risk of massive financial damages, because Dominion's damages are now mounting. There are more cities, counties, and states that the Dominion will blame on these statements being made by these people. I don't think it'll be $1.6 billion. And I don't know how everybody's responsible magically for the same amount. That's the problem. They got to apportion damages. But they're getting some contracts canceled that are in the $100 million plus range.
Okay.
So they may have $500 million. I mean, that'd be enough to bankrupt any of these people other than maybe Mike Lindell.
Oh, yeah. But it's not like Lindell wants to pay $500 million anyhow. But the I say that the change of jurisdiction, the change of venue is always a no-brainer. You want to get to a favorable jury selection pool, but you know, like, it is DC, but who knows what comes out of discovery. In my mind, Dominion's got more exposure on the discovery than Lindell and the other defendants, because I don't believe they may be ill-founded. They may have I don't know if jumped the shark is the right word, but they may have some wrong impressions in fact and law, but I doubt you're going to see conspiratorial emails among them to say, let's make these allegations to screw Dominion.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Probably the most embarrassing discovery for Byrne, Lindell, Powell, Rudy, is going to be that they were put on notice by a range of people that this information was unreliable. I mean, I'm on public record saying that this information was unreliable. So you can imagine that other people told them that in email form too. And that will probably be the most embarrassing, that they didn't vet it at all. They put a bunch of fraudsters and scam artists and idiots up. And people can just read the court's order. Again, this was a Trump appointee, and he's a relatively decent one as Trump appointees go. You just look at the details of what's there. I mean, they promoted people who had been convicted fraudsters. They promoted people who had been a history of allegations and court determinations of prior fraud. They said themselves in communications that they had. I mean, it happened again this week in Mike Lindell's cyber symposium. His own lead cyber expert comes out to the Washington Times, by the way. That was the original story. It was a conservative press. They report and say, oh, by the way, we don't have any of the proof that we've been telling him that we have proof of. You know, at his own cyber symposium or at the end of it. I mean,
right, what did he say? They made
a lot of mistakes, made a lot of dumb statements. Powell made very aggressive statements, said she had the affidavits that proved it, videos that proved it. No, she didn't. She made it up and she got caught. And that's why they're all in serious trouble. I'm sure there's some embarrassing discovery from Dominion that they can find and get. It's not clear to me that they are prepared to get it. It's not clear to me that they have the people to get it. because they could have done this in the pre, during, even file the motion to dismiss, but ask for some limited discovery to prove aspects of the motion to dismiss or to prove, like, the reason why they lost the motion to transfer, they could have alleged a bunch of facts that this judge probably would have transferred to the Western District of Texas for jury pool purposes. They just didn't even allege it. I mean, they filed only the things that they had to file. It doesn't show the signs of real sophisticated civil litigation so far. So I don't intend, none of these people are all, Rudy Giuliani hasn't been in court but once since 1992. Mike Lindell does not do a lot of litigation. Sidney Powell is a criminal litigator, not a big civil litigator. These are people that, and a lot of the lawyers they've hired are decent, but nothing spectacular. So it's not, I think they will be outdone in court, unfortunately, on this.
What was I just about to say? I forget. It was, I'm going to forget now anyhow. But, limited discovery. That was the question. So it's going to be very easy for Dominion to say, well, the discovery of documents that the defendants might be entitled to can be reasonably limited such that Dominion can either limit its exposure or just limit the scope of whatever they're going to have to publicly disclose. And I guess it would be very easy also for them to file a number of things under seal or I don't know what the American equivalent is, file it confidentially so that the world may ultimately never get to see it in the first place.
I mean, I think Dominion has made a mistake the lawyers that they hired are the lawyers that did the Rolling Stone cases. They're close to a lot of politicians in Washington, close, by the way, to Fox News. Some of them have appeared on Tucker Carlson before to attack theories about the Covington cases they didn't want to see brought. You know, Tucker got taken for a ride in that presentation, but that's another story for another day. While they were promoting Lynn Wood, by the way, for their, you know, notably haven't got around to suing Lynn Wood. Kind of odd how that keeps working out. Everybody but Lynn Wood keeps getting sued. Wonder what that is. But so given all of these dynamics, it wouldn't surprise me for them to try to move for limited to discovery, but their problem is their suit is too broad. They should have stuck with the obviously false facts, left out all the rest. But by putting at issue whether there was any problem with the election, they have opened the door to discovery to everything. So in my view, you know, if they do a good job, either Patrick Byrne or One America News Network or Lindell or Giuliani or Powell, I believe they're entitled to full discovery on pretty much everything and anything. Now, what they'll find is some of their theories there won't be backed up at all.
Yeah.
By the way, this was a sign when I was predicting Dominion would sue, and a lot of commenters were like, you're full of it. They'll never sue because they know they're guilty. This should be a sign to everybody that they think all the evidence will back them up. They had no fear about marching forward.
Now, or people are going to say, or they feel confident they've deleted or destroyed whatever could be incriminating. But I say, anyone who's practiced law for any period of time knows you cannot ever fully delete, fully bleach bit, whatever. You can't do it. You can't rely on that.
Okay.
That's a spoilation order.
We come back with the video.
So under the Federal Rules of Evidence, Federal Rule 37, if you deliberately destroy evidence, that you know you're going to use or need in litigation or will be relevant in litigation, then the court can find that a whole bunch of sanctions against you. So,
management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We are back. This is Bill Grant, fill-in host for Mitchell Bupp, who is filling in, him being Jim Fetzer's producer, was filling in for Jim Fetzer, who is out today. And we're going to continue with this video. I will take call-ins, at least attempt to. It should go through. And maybe a little blip or something there. We'll get it in. Today is Monday, August 16th, 2021. Let's see. Also, I did want to say hello to a few people in chat. We have Surrey Sunflower in there. I haven't been in chat for a long time for many reasons. And Sam Squatch, wow. Hello to you in particular. Of course, Mona Radler, Mr. Rowe, the Reverend Dr. Mr. Rowe is in the house. I think he just popped in, or he just popped in another something to click on there. So get in, host, either way. Knight Rider is may or may not be new. I don't know, but he just popped in not long ago, about 10 minutes ago-ish. Walter Mauser, Blessing, hello to you guys. So right now, let me see who else is up there, up higher up in chat. Oh, Christine C. I'm not sure if that's Christine, our host, or a former host in between being able to host right now or not. Cubs fan, 1979, O.E. McVeigh, and so on. Hello to everybody and more. I don't really have time to try to go up the whole list. Don't know how far back in the past that goes. But coffee's just starting to hit me pretty good now. Just kind of waking up from being super tired. And basically from getting up hours early, which I've been trying to do more and more. I see Dirt Engineer's name on the side. Not sure if he's in here. Conch Girl and more. Rudolph, Mario. And probably our host, Mario. Good show. I haven't been able to listen to his show in a while. And bunch of others. Let me get back to the video. This thing's a little, I'm not used to using this particular mouse, but here we go. Back with Viva Frey, as he's called. That's the short version. And we have Robert Barnes and him talking. I haven't been able to listen to most of it. It's been intermittent for me, but let me set it back a couple minutes again. I may have already set it back a couple minutes, so it may be a little further back than I think. So here you go. Back to the show.
Putting at issue whether there was any problem with the election, they have opened the door to discovery to everything. So in my view, you know, they've opened. So if they do a good job, either Patrick Byrne or One America News Network or Lindell or Giuliani or Powell, I believe they're entitled to full discovery on pretty much everything and anything. Now, what they'll find is some of their theories there won't be backed up at all.
Yeah.
By the way, this was a sign when I was predicting Dominion would sue, and a lot of commenters were like, you're full of it. They'll never sue because they know they're guilty. This should be a sign to everybody that they think all the evidence will back them up. They had no fear about marching forward.
Now, or people are going to say, or they feel confident they've deleted or destroyed whatever could be incriminating. But I say anyone who's practiced law for any period of time knows you cannot ever fully delete, bleach bit, whatever. You can't do it. You can't rely on that.
If they did, that's a spoliation order against them. So under the Federal Rules of Evidence, Federal Rule 37, if you deliberately destroy evidence that you know you're going to use or need in litigation or will be relevant in litigation, then the court can find that a whole bunch of sanctions against you. So I can't believe Dominion would have taken that gamble. And so my view is that Dominion's very...
Just pausing the show for a second to answer Cubs fan in chat. I wish I knew the same question. Basically, Cubs fan asked if, let's see, how did he put it? Did Jim get COVID from his wife's vaccination? I'm wondering which direction that went myself. I think I heard Jim explaining this not long ago, but I'm not positive. And what I was wondering either way, what direction did it go? Did his wife get the vaccine, maybe against his will, and then she shed? And now they both, of course, have the real epidemic, the real pandemic caused by the vaccines as intended. Or did Jim get tested, or let's say both were tested. His wife was negative, but he came positive. He kind of believed it, wasn't sure, or they forced him to tried to get him to take the vax, or, you know, whatever they prescribed the doctors, Fauci and science. And the question isn't, do you trust science? The question is, do you trust the science? That's how they put it, right? What science? It's the science. The science means which science? Some scientist, some group of scientists, some particular branch of science, some particular so-called scientific facts. Well, I don't trust that science, and I don't trust those scientists, and it's not real science coming from not real scientists. Fauci isn't real too much, let's say too much of a real scientist. He is not as portrayed either way. And, okay, it's not a real vaccine. It's not even a real virus. Think about this. Even if it's a fake so-called virus in a lab, it's still not even a virus. See, the virus, if real by any means at all, itself is not a virus. This is smaller than, like, a breakaway of a virus, okay? And maybe you could get away with calling it a virus, but it's by far not typical lab created or otherwise, if it's real by any means at all. And of course, they do have all these things locked away in labs, ready to release anytime they feel like it or have a mistake in any case. But basically, let's see who that was, Cubs fan. Let me see. Yeah, these damn shots, these needle injections. I call them lethal injections. I'm one of the first ones to say that. Hopefully, I know other people finally started saying that. Maybe it had nothing to do with me. It's kind of someone certainly going to come up with the same term, but maybe it was me. It might be because of me. They're the death shots, the kill shots, as I used to put them as well, right from the beginning. And that's been the plan we've been trying to warn everybody about. But so let's say Jim and his wife, or just Jim, was tested. He came back positive. Who knows what direction he took, what he accepted or didn't. But let's say because of him being positive, his wife chose to or was forced to get the shot, the vaccine. Either way, now they're, let's say now she's damaged and she may shed onto him, at least breathe out, you know, it could be anything. I mean, nanotech, a new vet, you know, an actual virus, you know, whatever it creates in your body throughout all the cells in your body, including your lungs, which would be breathed out if it's something that would be capable of going airborne, which it probably will. I'm trying to read while I'm talking. Sorry, guys. I know I repeat a little bit too. I'll get back to this video in a second. Cubs fan. Wait, no, Rudolph. Too Maggie had a really long. I didn't realize that was Too Maggie. Had something really long to read. And I'm going to get back to this. But call in if you want to. You know, Giuseppe often calls in, Paul. I should be able to bring you in, maybe call you back if you want, and a bunch of others. But, okay, it's hard for me to read at the same time while I'm waking up. Let me get back to this, and I'll read. Got to go do one thing quick, and I'll be back. It's the last 20 minutes of the show, and Jim should be back. He's expected to be back for the next show, I believe. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, here is Robert and Frey. Let's say Viva.
Very confident in their position. But so if you know, all the, you know, Powell and all the rest, if they believe that they have, that they'll find evidence, they're now going to be given full opportunity to get it. So, you know, if they don't get it now, that means it never existed, period. But they are going to be subject to some discovery on their own. Now, Dominion can ask for some aspects of that to be under seal, under protective order. And what they'll do is they'll say every time any of these defendants have got even pieces of information, they've misused it and lied about it. So we want limited what they get access to. And the court probably would partially grant that, but not fully. But they'll have their chance to prove their case. And we'll see if they are able to do so. But I mean, on some of the things, they're dead to rights, unfortunately.
I was going to say, even if they successfully prove 10% of what they claimed, that I'll still be impressed. I mean, I'll still be, I might eat my words depending on what that 10% includes, but let's see where it goes. The depositions will be fun. And speaking of depositions, going to be fun. So Project Veritas, it's another victory in that they get to pursue their claim. New York Times, everybody knows this, filed a motion to dismiss under New York State anti-SLAPP legislation. The motion to dismiss was dismissed. New York Times appeals the dismissal of their motion to dismiss. In the interim, asks for a stay of proceedings, for a stay of discovery, pending the appeal of the dismissal of their motion to dismiss. I hope that made sense. The motion to stay the discoveries was dismissed. Good news all, I mean, it's good news all around. The judge, Robert, I'm not wrong. The judge who heard this case, the judge who rendered this decision was the judge who rendered the original decision dismissing the motion to dismiss, correct?
That's absolutely right.
Okay, so
because in New York Supreme Court refers to the lowest possible, the trial court.
Okay.
People got confused by that because they assume Supreme Court always means the highest court of the state, not in New York. Leave it to New York to have a different definition.
Oh, in British Columbia, I think they have the same thing, the Supreme Court of British Columbia, which is the first court, not even below the appeals. So the same judge hears the motion for stay, and he says, look, you didn't persuade me the first time. You didn't persuade me this time. You didn't provide any authority to justify granting a stay of discovery when it's a dismissal under the anti-SLAPP legislation. And so you're going to proceed with discovery. Great victory all around. But that last paragraph of the lawsuit, which says without prejudice to their right to petition the appellate division for a stay. What does that mean, and what can that turn into? Can they just go to the appeals court and say, look, this judge got it wrong, or override this judge?
They can. It's just very rare that that's granted.
Okay. So.
Okay. Just interrupting briefly again. I did just want everybody. I love Robert Barnes, and I know I like Viva at least some of what I've heard in the past. I just wanted to give the website for Robert a. Basically, this is he is at vivabarneslaw.locals.com, I think. It's hard to read with this thing over it. But basically, that's it. Everybody check that out. Check him out. He's working on a whole bunch of cool, great stuff. And I just love him. So Viva Barnes Law is one word, V-I-V-A for Viva. Barnes is B-A-R-N-E-S. Normal Law. L-A-W .locals with an S, I believe. I can hardly see it. I assume there's a .com. There may not be a .com. It may just be locals.com. So .locals.com. I don't know. Check it out. Great stuff. Back to the show.
It's good. Look, the Project Veritas's massive victory is that there will be no stay of the discovery, which, I mean, the delays were shocking, but not so shocking. Hurry up and wait in court. The judge was saying the delays could be 3 years, which I think is a double-edged sword, because the New York Times can turn around and say, look, we're going to be subject to 3 years of deposition before the appeal of the motion to dismissal is heard. That's double prejudice. But bottom line, it's just money that can be compensated if they succeed on the dismissal of the suit. We'll see where it goes, because their depositions are going to be gloriously revelatory. Because if I had to trust anybody to run their mouths without control privately in email and text correspondence, it's journalists at the New York Times. So I'm dying to see where that one goes.
Yep. So not only Nunes got a big win, Project Veritas got a big win. I'm not going to discuss this case in detail, but except at vivabarneslaw.locals.com because of the information contained in it. But one of America's frontline doctors has sued CNN for defamation, identifying all the ways that they lied about her. And she was one of the people that was really caricatured by the media. And it turns out it was all based on misrepresentations by CNN. So I'll be breaking down that suit later this week at vivabarneslaw.locals.com, because it shows the scope and scale to which the media has been lying about a lot of issues related to this pandemic.
All right, let's move into, more good news, I guess, is when justice prevails after a half year of injustice. Some of the defendants, or at least one defendant to the January 6th insurrection, riot, protest, whatever you want to call it, the judge basically said enough is enough. This is unjustified detention, given the absence of allegations of any threats, community risk that this defendant poses. The lower court did not contemplate any of the alternative methods of bail conditions which could have been explored. Bottom line, for anybody who doesn't know, I forget the name of the defendant, one of the ones who was accused of assaulting Officer Sicknick. And I went into detail about the fake news of New York Times, still has not retracted, corrected, removed that article about how Sicknick died, depicting his cause of death as being at the hands of Trump supporting protesters. Setting that aside, this is one of the defendants who was accused of pepper spraying or bear macing the officer accused of assault. He's been in pretrial detention since March. So that's March, April, May, June, July, 5 months, going on six, pretrial detention. And has finally, they basically remanded it to the lower court to say, come up with something that makes sense, but get this guy out.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, and for people that don't understand how rare this is, the courts of appeals have, since the Bail and Reform Act of 1984, have mostly abandoned any kind of oversight or supervision in bail cases. They've allowed magistrates and judges to do whatever they want and to go wild. And they used to, and in part because the appellate standard changed with that law. But before then, it was frequent that appeals court judges, Supreme Court judges sitting by circuit, would overturn bail decisions and really enforce the Eighth Amendment from about 1950 until the early 1980s. But since then, courts of appeals have been abandoning their oversight duties. But now there have been two big wins out of the liberal D.C. circuit for January 6th defendants on bail. Well, so that's extraordinary.
Now, but I think I got it right in the video, but at the very least, two of the three judges, if not all three, were Republican appointees at one point. It was Bill Clinton that appointed them to the appellate division, but was appointed nonetheless by Bush before. So, okay, people can write it off as a political decision, although, like I say, this should not vary depending on what side of the aisle you stand on, sit on, whatever. This was egregious in the first place. I can appreciate people say, lock him up and throw away the key if you want to think that way. That would be after a trial and a conviction. Lock him up and throw away the key for pretrial detention is a violation of human rights. It's cruel and unusual punishment. It's unconstitutional, period. My dog is scratching himself viciously. But This is another decision where there was a caveat that said subject to a full review en banc. What are the chances that this gets taken up by the full panel en banc and they overturn it?
Next to none. Next to none.
Okay.
So it's rare enough that bail decisions are reviewed at all. This was a pretty basic decision. I don't think they published it. And it just made the point that when you have someone that it has no criminal history of any kind, no felony criminal history of any consequence, in that kind of circumstance, long-term imprisonment while waiting for trial is not a good idea. And I think what this reflects is the court of public opinion continues to push back and more judges are hearing it. That's number one. Number two, they're seeing that the prosecutors rush to trial, rush to indict without evidence. And that they're just now gathering the evidence, that some of the evidence supports the defense. It was admitted this week by prosecutors that there's evidence that of supporting entrapment, and you don't even have to show entrapment, showing that people were not criminally willfully obstructing any proceeding or criminally willfully trespassing because they believed that they had it was okay legally for them to be there based on doors being open, doors being held open, being welcomed by Capitol Police smiling with them, laughing with them, taking selfies with them, and that they admitted that all that evidence actually exists and that they're working on getting it together. Otherwise, they're having to admit that evidence is missing. There's evidence that was on certain doors in certain parts of the Capitol that apparently has disappeared. They're now claiming maybe they never had it, which makes no sense. The cameras, maybe like the Epstein death and the McAfee death, the cameras just malfunctioned magically at the right time.
14,000 hours of footage, but not that 1 minute. I mean, that would be the glorious thing.
And they are admitting they can't turn over all of this evidence, including the defendant's own phones that they seized back to them. So what you're seeing is more and more recognition by the court system that this case was not what it was laid out to be, that the courts now look like political hacks, locking up people that should not be locked up for this length of time. The few sentences that have gone forward, they recognize should not be for high sentences or sentenced at all in certain cases. And the Court of Appeals is now starting to respond to that, as again, the Court of Public Opinion continues to push back again and again, saying these charges have been exaggerated, this incident has been overstated, and this treatment doesn't conform to what we want the legal system and the criminal justice system to look like, especially when foreign governments can make fun of us for what's going on, like the Russian government has been now for months.
No, I mean, you imagine the goodwill that you waste in your ability to criticize other actual tyrannical governments for their political oppression, whereas you're making yourself into one in the eyes of those nations. Putin's not a stupid person. He's going to rub your face in this the way it should be rubbed in it, where you are obstructing a formal, what's the charge, Robert? Obstructing
a proceeding.
Obstructing a proceeding that lands you in pretrial detention for 6 months. I mean, whereas the worst sentence that we've seen thus far, I think, has been 8 months. So it's unconscionable that the pretrial detention could still be going on for anybody in this circumstance. I don't want to compare it to Portland riots or the Molotov cocktail lawyers or the FBI agent in the Whitmer, a plot convicted of grievous, basically, assault, but, causing grievous bodily harm, but not death, who's let out on $10,000 personal recognizance. There's no way to justify this. And it doesn't matter how much you hate these people. If you're politically motivated, it can't be tolerated. And it's about time. And I do appreciate that maybe the judges are seeing it and maybe they're feeling it. So I guess, public outrage can take some credit.
Well, it was part of a trend with the Biden administration this week.
Oh, yes.
Because they suffered, aside from the ignominious defeat in Afghanistan, this defeat in the January 6th cases on issues of bail and discovery and due process. They had a full bench trial in Armadillo, Texas, where the state of Texas and the state of Missouri sued the Biden administration for not only scrapping the plan that the Trump administration took several years to get done with the Mexican government and the Texas government, which basically provided that if people came in illegally, that they could be required to stay in Mexico pending their asylum hearing if they requested asylum, as long as they were not at risk in Mexico and a whole bunch of other categories, rather than come into the United States where they didn't have sufficient detention facilities. Speaking of detention, it's interesting. All the January 6th defendants, no problems with enough detention facilities. Illegal immigrants here who may be at great danger to the country. We don't have enough detention facilities.
And vaccine passports, vaccine requirements, mask mandates, all good for the citizens, and not a slightest expression of concern for those crossing the border illegally from the south in large numbers. And from what I understand, with relatively high, if not exceedingly high, positive rates. But yes, sorry.
Exactly. Double standard. And then being dropped all across the country in ways that could to spike local pandemic infection problems. And so this in particular concerned a group of people that needed to, that they could not, that they said they did not have the facilities to detain in the United States. So the only other option was to release them back in Mexico. Otherwise, there was risk that if they were released in the United States, they would never show up. And there was lots of evidence of people suddenly claiming asylum because a lot of sort of lefty pro-immigration organizations preached to them to say the words asylum, who clearly did not meet the evidentiary standard for asylum, which is a very high standard. I think the standard should be more generous than it currently is. But these are people that they know or don't really meet it. It's not often not asserted in good faith. But the Biden administration had completely reversed all of those agreements between the U.S. and Mexico and the U.S. and Texas. And they were allowing people to come in. All they had to do was say the magic word asylum, and they were being released right in the United States, knowing that likely they'll never show up for the hearing. And so Texas and Missouri sued. They had a full bench trial, and the judge came to the conclusion that the Biden administration violated the Administrative Procedures Act, had not followed any of the provisions for that, that it was arbitrary and capricious what they had been doing because they had ignored relevant evidence, included irrelevant evidence, and came to.
Okay, we're about to end the show. This is Bill Grant, temporary fill-in host for Mitchell, who is filling in and normally produces for Jim Fetzer. Yeah, Fetzer on the Raw Deal here at Revolution Radio at revolution.radio. A donation station, please donate. Get into the chat room. A lot of great chatting going on right now. Basically, a bunch of hosts who you may normally listen to in there as well. I think I hear the end of the show beginning. Check out Viva Frey to hear the end of this. I'll put this in chat right now. I'll put this link, this YouTube link in chat now. It's 2 hours long. It's a two-hour and 10-minute video with Robert Barnes along with Viva. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The perfect triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the perfect triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.